You're listening to the Queer Yid podcast, where we share the stories of LGBTQ Jews from religious backgrounds. My name is Hannah Peterson, and today I've got the pleasure of speaking with Sam Bronstein. Sam grew up going to Chabad and Beis Yaakov schools in California and Israel. Today, they are a writer, student, and disabilities activist. They identify as a non-binary queer lesbian, and their pronouns are they, them. Sam writes about their experiences juggling physical disability, mental health, and their queer identity on their blog, as well as on Facebook and Instagram, linked in the description. In today's show, Sam and I speak about their journey, finding a language for the different parts of their identity, and how embracing labels can be sometimes liberating and sometimes limiting. Before we begin, a quick content warning. Sam's narrative touches on some sensitive topics, including sexual abuse and suicide. If you would prefer to skip those sections, exact times have been included in the description. With that said, I'd like to introduce you to Sam.
Okay, so I was born in Palo Alto, California, and we were part of the very small Chabad community. We lived two blocks down. My parents were not Chabad. They were always considered themselves friends of Chabad. My dad in high tech and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. So we went, the rabbi there had a school just basically for his kids and like a few other kids that wanted to. So I grew up in like relative Chabad education. And then we moved to Israel when I was 11. And then we moved to Ramat Beit Shemesh straight away. And my parents put me in Beis Yaakov.
Okay. So you said that you didn't grow up Chabad, but was your family religious?
My family was religious. My mother converted before she got married and before she met my father. And my father grew up in a Jewish home that wasn't religious. So they consistently became like more religious. They were always more than modern Orthodox, but we ate like OUD, but my mother would like choose which kind of books we could read. She wasn't into letting us read Harry Potter. Like we had to read very specific type books.
Uh-huh. Okay. So when they moved, when you were 11, like there was a change in how religious your family life was.
Yeah, my parents very quickly wanted to fit in very high, like with the religious Haredi community that we moved here in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Like my father switched right away to black and white. He bought like a hat, like those, and he was like, yeah, that was the only way you were going to get into school. So like I had to change. I mean, my mother went like, you know, we used to wear like t-shirts and pants for pajamas. My mother like took all that out and like bought us all, me and my sister, only nightgowns. And they both went very hardcore, like religious, like very intense. And we were as siblings, which is like, excuse me, you're kind of fine the way we were. Don't really need this very intense. Also just became more closed. Like my mother didn't let us read non-Jewish books anymore. My mother bought like all the Jewish books. Mm-hmm. And it became, on that one hand, it became very like censored. On the other hand, my father had bought me a computer because I was basically like, I'm not moving to Israel. And he's like, fine, I'll buy you a MacBook.
Wow.
So I had a computer I went off the deep end because I was 11 and had a computer with internet and had no idea what I was doing. So I was like watching pirated TV shows, you know, wearing nightgowns and going to Beis Yaakov. So then I was in Beis Yaakov from 6th through 9th grade, at the end of 9th grade, in three different schools. At the end of 9th grade, I was just like, I'm done. I can't do Beis Yaakov. Like that's not going to last. We're not surviving high school through to Beis Yaakov. So I had actually had a friend who was from California. She was a classmate of mine and she was in Kfar Chabad. She was in the dorms in high school there. So she told me about it. And I told my parents, I'm like, you have to get me into the school there. It was like in June. I was like, you have to get me into the school there for the rest of high school. So that's what I did. So I switched. It was better. Anything in Chabad for me would just work better than Beis Yaakov. There is like slightly more tolerance, even in Israel, not as much as in America.
Tolerance of what?
Of kind of a little bit of being yourself. Like they wanted me to be a little bit different, but on the other hand, like my 10th grade teacher, she also had a disabled child. She had a child who was blind. So she very much, I think, understood the dichotomy of religion and disability, which mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people understand. So they were more of accepting and understanding that I wasn't really going to follow their path. Like, I wasn't going to be straightforward, super religious, do their 21 and married and go off and have children. And like, there was a little bit more of an understanding in within the Chabad system. And they were willing to give me an education. They gave me a full Bagrut, which in Beis Yaakov they weren't willing to do. And I was just like, I'm not doing high school without getting enough of an education to go to college. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, that's high schooling here.
Okay, so during that time, did you have any inkling of your queer identity?
Okay, so I had, on the down low, I had no idea about anything because mm-hmm. no sexuality or anything was discussed ever in my house. I mean, looking back at it, I had crushes on XYZ that I was like, oh, those were those feelings. Congratulations on figuring out what that is.
Wow, I relate so, so deeply.
And no idea what those meant. And just like attraction to the female body and blah, blah, blah. But I had no idea what any of that meant. Like, mm-hmm. forget it. That was like not a thing. And I had, it was funny because I only had guy friends outside of school. And my friends were like, the girls in the dorm were like, you can't talk to guys, blah, blah, blah. I was like, why? He's like my best friend. He's like my brother. Like, who cares?
That was while you were in high school in Kfar Chabad.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, looking back, I was like, oh, duh. And then I was like, oh, I also had a crush on my fourth grade teacher. But I had no words for that until like 20 years later. And I was talking to my friend. I was like, holy hell, that was a crush. Great. Took me a while.
mm-hmm. Okay. So at that point, you're in high school in Kfar Chabad and you've had these crushes or whatever, and you have these guy friends, but it's certainly not there at a conscious level. Through the process of your parents, you know, moving the family to Israel and becoming more religious, I get the sense that you kind of had an adversarial relationship with religion, or at least the system you were in.
Yeah. I mean, so I had an adversarial relationship with religion. I think that adversarial relationship with religion evolved and started in different ways. My uncle died when I was nine. No, not when I was nine. I was 10, whatever. Okay. And I was very close to him. He was my father's younger brother. And that was like very triggering and traumatic. And the answer to it was like, well, God takes like the best ones and everything. And like that on him, that already like triggered me. I'm like, that's such a crap answer to like death as a 10-year-old. Like, I struggled already with that idea of like that version of God that just the be all end all take all. And then we moved to Israel and it became, there's one type of religious, we're Beis Yaakov, we need to fit into their religion because their religion is right to their, you know, proper version of it. And I also got so much flack for having any connection to Chabad. Like, I used in Beis Yaakov, I use like a Chabad Chumash and a Siddur, and like my Chumash got taken away. Like, I had it on my desk and like the principal confiscated it. Like, my father had to go back after I graduated to pick it up.
Seriously?
I'm like, yeah. And so then once I was in high school, I like was in Beis Yaakov, but I used my Chitas like specifically because the principal hated it. So I like would specifically leave it out on the desk when she would come in to teach us. Mm-hmm. And like Dafka, because like, what's your problem with it?
So did that like strengthen, did that strengthen your relationship to being Chabad in a weird way?
It did, because it was like, what's wrong with it? What's so bad about it? Like, uh-huh. only your version of Judaism is the right one. Like, to me, it was very, I connected with Chabad and Hasidism. That's very, very much been my jam, even when I've like felt and not followed like their version of, like how they, you know, raise their kids and their pipeline, I guess you would say. And like the essence of what Chabad is, not necessarily like every person and how their schooling is. Like, I had plenty of problems in Kfar Chabad in high school. It was interesting. In 10th grade, I was like really religious. And I think part of it was this idea of like, if I learn enough and I do enough, everything will kind of get figured out. And I think partially it was because I had no idea I was queer and all these feelings, I had no idea what to do with anything. So I was like, great, we're just going to like sit and learn Hasidus as much as possible with as many people as possible. And like, everything's going to be figured out. I'm like, that didn't work. Mm-hmm. So 11th and 12th grade, I kind of just stuck around because I knew you had to just follow the rules. I was very much like, I know I need to get an education. I need to finish school.
That's like a really quick turnaround though, from 1 year being like super stark and into it to the next year being like, all right, this is what I got to do. I'll, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was that 1 year I was in the dorms. So it was even more than I think I actually was. It was the surrounding. There were Verbringens all the time. There was like, there were people coming in to give shiurim. So you were kind of just like drawn into it anyway, even more than like I necessarily would have learned probably. But there was like a girl who would come and learn like the Tamar Malchus once a week and whatever. So it's like, okay, fine, I'll come and sit and learn. So I ended up just being so much more involved with it than per se I think I would have if I wasn't in the dorm environment that was like hardcore all the time, very Hasidish.
And then in 11th and 12th grade, you weren't in the dorms.
Yeah, the dorm ended and I like stayed. I was basically living at home where I lived in a few different places, but I was basically just finishing out the schooling there. Mm-hmm. It became very much, especially my family, became very much like, what are you wearing? And if you're not doing this, that, or the other, we can't see that you're connected to God, so you're not connected to God. And it's like, that's not it. But it took me a very long time to not, after high school, I was like, I'm done with everything. My parents like forced me to go to seminary.
So you are in high school, you're finishing out the last 2 years, no longer living in the dorms in like the full Israeli program. And then after that, you were supposed to go to seminary in Tel Aviv, but instead, where do you end up?
So instead I end up in Pittsburgh. I had gotten myself a job this spring of 11th grade. I like found this Chabad like Shlucha, and she was starting like a Pesach hotel. And I like basically emailed her and messaged her like 1,000 times. I'm like, can I come work for you in the kitchen? So she was basically like, who wants to come like pay their ticket from Israel to come work for me? She was like, I thought you were great. Like, I thought you were like a scam. Like, I didn't reply to your first 5 emails because I thought it was a scam. But I don't even remember how I found her. I think I was still so desperate to just get out of like my home and where I was. And I was still at that point, like, playing the religious part, even though I didn't believe in any of it. So I went to Pesach there and I worked in the kitchens, and it was funny. I ended up being like the mashgicha, and I was like more intense than like the guys who were there, who were never on time and never working. So I did that. So then I ended up working for her also in her summer camp. And I came back the next year to also work for her in the summer camp.
Mm-hmm. So that's the summer of 11th and 12th grade.
Right, exactly. So the end of summer of 12th grade, I was in the States. And then I was going to stay by her house for like the Chagim and just help her out, because at that point I was like very much involved with her family and helping her out. So basically we were in Sukkot, we were in Montreal with her family, and my mother called and she's like, by the way, you're not coming home. You're going to seminary in Pittsburgh. I'm like, what are you talking about? We talked about this. They have really bad weather. I didn't even apply. What are you talking about? We're in October. I'm coming home to go to seminary in Tel Aviv. And she's like, no, you don't understand. I talked to the rabbi, like he's going to call you and interview you, but basically like you're going to this program. We had looked into Tzohar. I actually liked their idea of their program, but we had really tabled it because snow, Pittsburgh, and wheelchairs and disability, I was like, we're just not doing it. But then we did. So I was there for a semester. The rabbi is amazing. I am still in touch with him to this day. We speak probably once a week or whatever. I didn't fit into the program. What a surprise. I stayed one semester.
In what way?
It was so much inauthenticity. And I think what I was searching for at that point was like, give me an authentic version of something. So when we came to the end of the first semester, also it like, of course, was like snowing awfully. And I was like, just so much physical pain with joints. So I went first winter break back to my hometown, to Palo Alto. And while I was there, I like spoke to the rabbi and I'm just like, listen, like, this isn't going to work. And I spoke with him and he's like, yeah, honestly, like, I wasn't sure what we were really going to do with you the next semester. Like, we've done half a semester. We've done one semester. It was good for what it was, but we were both able to sit in the room and tell my parents and be like, this isn't the right fit to last for another half a year.
Okay. So what happens next?
I came back, what, like March or whatever. So my parents were like, yeah, we spoke to the neighbors. Listen, they know this guy in England. Mind you, I was like 19 and just got home from like 6 months of seminary. And like, they think he's a great fit for you. I was like, what? Why? And they're like, oh, he's disabled. And like, his family's very open. So you could like go to England and play sports. And I was like, what's his name? Why, what do I have in common with him? Why would we be a good fit? She's like, he's disabled. I'm like, mom, it's not a good reason. So I actually just called the rabbi and I was like, listen, my parents are crazy. Okay. Like, and you know this, cause we've been having discourse with them the whole year. My parents are trying to marry me off to some guy in England. I have no idea who he is. And he called them. He's like, what are you doing? This is not what she needs right now. This is not the right time, right idea, right anything. So he had really become someone who'd walk my parents off these ledges of trying to like save me. So that was the one time they did that.
And when you were like saying no to that shit, aside from the fact that like, you know, you were given no good reason to date this person, I guess like, was there any part of your queer story that was playing into it?
So I do think that I realized going to all these weddings, because by that point I was back in Israel, like I had a class of 150, a grade of 150 girls, and I was probably going to weddings every week in Kfar Chabad or whatever. And I like the spirituality of weddings. Like I love spirituality, but I very much noticed I wasn't like that wasn't, I didn't have this vision in my head, you know, like you copy paste and like see yourself in that situation. And it was very much not it. And the more weddings I went to, the more uncomfortable I felt. And after I came out, I went to weddings. And I was like, oh, I get it. It was because I couldn't, because I wasn't envisioning myself in this situation. Like there was no way I was ever going to marry a man. Now I couldn't verbalize that at 19. It was very much not out. But it was very clearly this, like, that's not going to happen. That's not what I want. Not I understood that I wanted something else, but it was very clear to me that, like, I'm not doing the whole marry a man. Not because my comma was telling my mom, yeah, because I'm going to marry a woman. It was because I'm just, the period there at the end of the sentence, I'm not marrying a man. There's nothing else that I understand or like could verbalize. I think I also, there was no queer representation. I mean, forget it. I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah.
And it took me
when did so you much time. First come across the concept of homosexuality?
So I actually came across it in high school. I wanted to play wheelchair basketball. Well, that actually there was whatever. And that's a whole other thing. There were, so, yes, but not.
Okay.
Like again, I wasn't with it. But in ninth, I guess it was 10th grade probably. I was searching to play basketball. And my mother was like, you can't play with boys. You can't play with boys. My mother was always so terrified of me playing like mixed sports. So I like scoured the earth and I found this now defunct women's wheelchair basketball team. The captain of the team, of course, and I think 99% of all the other women on the team are queer. But I had like no like terminology. It was just, she like introduced me to her wife who like would come to practices. I was like, oh, that's a thing. Cool. But I didn't like transfer it. So my mother in the car, my mother's very into like making shidduchim. She like, it's her thing. So she was like asking me about the the captain of the team, and I was like, oh, she doesn't, like, she's married. And she's like, oh, who's your husband? I was like, and it's a woman. And my mother, like, shut down the whole conversation. That was the end of the conversation. And then in therapy, very dysfunctional therapy, my therapist was like, so what do you think about gay people? I was like, I don't know, nothing. It's fine. Like, who cares? Like, she was very religious also. And like, you could totally tell it was like my mother who shut down the conversation and was like, we're going to have the therapist talk to her about it. So she's like, so are you queer? And I was like, no, like, adamantly pushing back. Them? Yeah. Wow. She's like, well, what do you think about it? I'm like, I don't know. It's fine. Like, everyone should just like who they want. But it was very much this, like, how do you even know about it? I'm like, I don't. Like, I only knew about it because the coach, like, the captain introduced me to her wife. Like, I didn't, like, I don't have this whole other breadth of, like, queer interaction. But I knew automatically then that I didn't fully understand why I was so adamantly, like, no, I'm absolutely not, but I'm totally okay with the queer community. But that was totally the situation I would have had to respond to it in that way. Like, there was no way it would have been safe to be, like, A, to process the feelings enough to get to the reaction of, like, oh, I am queer. That was such an unsafe space to have to do it, which was, like, amazing that it was, like, my therapist's office and not just my parents.
Wow. Okay. So you turn down the shidduch because you realize that you don't want to marry a man. And at that point, it's still a period, not a comma. I love the phrasing, by the way. You know that you don't want to marry a man. You're not sure what else because it's not safe for you to think about that. What happens next at this point in your narrative?
So I come back to Israel and I'm rowing. I was doing rowing up in high school. I started rowing. So I was like rowing like full time. So we basically actually ended up, I went to America for a year in 2015. Okay. I was training on the rowing team. There was all this drama in Israel and I basically like found, I got an option to train. They had like a US national training camp and I got myself an invitation. And then I basically just moved to Florida there. I like went with a suitcase and then found coaches who I liked and moved to Orlando.
Okay. And this is the year after you have your semester in seminary and then come back to Israel, right?
I think it's like 2 years later.
Okay.
I was in seminary 2013 and I went to America 2015.
Okay.
So I go to America. I cut my hair super fucking short. I had no idea I was queer, but my hair was short. And I got comments from family friends. They're like, your hair is so short, you look gay. And I was like, what do you mean? Great, your head is so stuck. Like, I was so stuck. The taxi driver, my taxi driver, had like a regular taxi driver who would drive me from like school to growing. And he was like, oh, you're never going to marry a man. You're too strong of like a person. And like, I talked to my coach. I'm like, what are you talking? What is this? What is he talking about? She's like, it's fine. You'll figure it out at your own time. Wow. She's an amazing person. She was like, don't worry about it. Like, you'll understand at some point. Like, don't sit and stress about it, but you will understand what this actually means at some point.
Wow. So you think that she picked up on something?
Oh, she absolutely did. I spoke to her after I came out. She's like, yeah, everyone knew. Like, you were very late to this party. Everyone knew you were queer. You figured it out much later. So I had come back to Israel at the end of that year. And while I was waiting to go to university, I was dealing with Bituach Lumi and all the things. I just, like, I had no interest in being in Beit Shemesh. Mm-hmm. So... And I was like, well, let's look at religion from a different aspect. Again, I wasn't actively outside religious. I very clearly at that point was just like, I don't like societal version of religion. It doesn't work for me, especially in Israel. Because when I was actually living in Florida, my parents, like half of their version was allowing to let me go. Like I rented an apartment that was like across a driveway from Chabad house. And I actually went to the Chabad house like on Shabbos, like every Shabbos morning. I'd go to like work out at the gym, I'd shower and I'd go to the Chabad house. And I'd go for like Kiddush and we'd sit and we'd learn or whatever. And they were like super cool with the fact that they obviously knew that I was not keeping anything, mm-hmm. but they were able to have like a normal conversation to me. So again, it became this thing of like, Chabad's super cool. They're not asking me to conform to anything. They can give me, they're happy with whatever dose of Judaism that I'm here and willing to like, and we were willing and able to accept at that point, willing to work with you on, which I think is lacking in Israel, because I think in Israel it becomes like a box. Like, they didn't ask me, how do you define yourself? The amount of people who ask me here, how do I define myself in the religious world? I'm like, I don't, because I don't fit. So that's something that I am like very much miss about being, not being in America, was having that, like, you do you, we do us, and like, we're happy to have you whenever you want to be here. So yeah. So when I came back here, I went to a program in Jerusalem, because I was like, I just don't have interest in living in Beit Shemesh. And I was in this year of like, I was doing psychometry and I was waiting to get into school. It was just all like, okay. So I went to this midrasha that's like pretty Zionist. Mm-hmm. We had an American program. This is when I came out, because my friend was like, oh, you're not out? I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like out of the closet, queer, gay, you know what I mean? Like all these things. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you give off the biggest queer energy. How the hell are you not out of the closet? Why am I telling you you're gay? Like, how is this the thing? And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I was like, oh, so then I like sat with myself and I was like, oh, good morning. Your life would have been so much easier. I don't know if it would have been easier, but I think would have.
Can we dig into that for a minute? You have a friend.
Yeah, what are we digging into?
From seminary or from Midrash Shah, right? Who's like asking you, why aren't you out? Like, you said that you sat with it, but like, what was that process like?
At first, it was like, what are you even talking about? Again, what is this lexicon? She's like, go read this book. Like, she gave me a bunch, like, it was just like resources of like, oh, here's language that explains what you're feeling, what your identity is. And I look at things way too analytically, I think. So I needed like analytically to process and be like, oh, here's all the dots on the map, and this is why they all connect, and the end dot is you're gay. Congratulations. Putting all those dots together took you to the age of like 20, 21. It's very like way too long.
And those dots, what were they?
I mean, I think part of it was noticing, yeah, I never liked guys. Like, that wasn't a thing. Like, I remember like my friends asking me like, who's the perfect guy in your opinion? And I would like, and like, what do they look like? And I remember handing my friend like pictures of wrestlers because I watched wrestling, and she's like, oh, I'm never going to find someone like that for you. I was like, yeah, that's kind of the point. But not putting together like, A, you watch the women wrestlers because you think they're hot, not the guys. You want to be the guy's friends. Like, haven't we realized that? Okay, you think the girls are hot, you don't really care what the guys look like. You want to look like them, you want to look like their physique, you want their physique, but you have no interest in dating them. Again, ding, ling, ling, I'm not sure how much brighter we could give a light. I mean, I think it was also just admitting and understanding attraction. I'd been molested as a kid, so that really shut off a lot of like anything to do with like sexuality. It's like still such a problem. I'm like in therapy and working on it, because like I'd actually like to be in a relationship at this point, and it's like such a blocker. So I think I was very much working on like, I think it was very external. A lot of the pieces were external, and I think I also then was like, oh, I don't believe it. Everyone also was like, oh yeah, you like sports, of course you're gay. I was like, I don't understand what that has to do with anything. But also that gave me representation of seeing people. Like I started watching women's basketball and all these different things. And they like outwardly were like married to women and speaking about it and whatever. And I was like, oh, again, that's a thing. That's normal. There's a society that accepts it and talks about it, regardless of if that doesn't exist in my world.
So you're saying that through, like, on the one hand, you pushed against this like stereotype that because you were into sports that made you gay. But at the same time, the fact that you were watching sports sort of helped contribute to that lexicon that you were talking about. Like, it gave you language to be able to.
Yeah, I think I always was just like, oh, I'm the tomboy. You know, there's always that like typical girl who's the tomboy in every story and every arc. And I was just like, great, but that doesn't make me gay. And then it was like, no, it doesn't, but you were gay. Like, no, it doesn't make you gay. There are women who are not gay and play sports, but you are not one of those people. And I actually ended up speaking to the same captain. We stayed friends. She also was a rower. She got me into rowing. Yeah. So we sat and we spoke a lot and I'm just like, what do I do with this? She's like, A, it's fine. Again, process will take you a minute. But B, she's like, just because in your community and where you come from, that doesn't, like, it's not seen and shown. Like, it really doesn't mean, A, that anything's wrong with you. Because automatically I was like, well, that's not what's supposed to be, right? I'm supposed to, like, regardless of the fact that I just didn't want to, like, a religious Jewish marriage or marry a guy without understanding that it was like, yeah, because I have absolutely no attraction to men and I have no interest in ever marrying one. I think that also very much solidified it. Like going to weddings once my friend was like, oh, dude, you're gay. Like, welcome to the party. And I think also there was a deep sense of like settling in myself. I still struggle mightily with my mental health, but I think a lot of it was so much like I can't figure out who I am. And a lot of it was like, if I can't figure out who I am and what I am, like, I'm just nobody and I don't want to be here. I don't want to be on this planet. I don't want to live. So like, I don't know. I feel like I haven't figured out a good way to like explain all the pieces on the map. I think specifically I also pushed back when she told me I was gay. I was like, no, just because I was abused as a kid and then I was like, well, just because that happened doesn't make me gay. And she was like, no, but you were gay anyway. Like, abuse is not like that mantra of abuse makes you gay is not true. And that's not the reason you're gay. You were gay to begin with. But I think it really pushes, that is such a situation of like pushing back of like, well, just because that happened, that doesn't mean it. And it's a lot of processing of like, yeah, not because of anything that these things happen, rather these were your feelings all along. And you really just didn't have the words to put anything into context. I mean, again, like I had crushes on girls in summer camp. I didn't know what those feelings were, what to do with them. Not even with like a form of crushes on guys versus crushes on girls. Within the religious community, you have no, there's no words for attraction. So you have no idea of any of it. And my parents were very much like, even though we read non-Jewish books in California, it was like very much like centered young kid. There's no relationship. There was no middle school, high school version of books with like crushes or this or that or whatever. So there was really absolutely no language in which to understand anything which I was feeling. Like that just did not exist. It's a mess. It's a messy road.
Well, I mean, I think that life is messy. And when one of the problems that I have with one of the problems that I still struggle with, I think, with my own queer identity is the fact that as much as like these labels that we give ourselves are very empowering, like they give us language to explain like shortcuts. They're kind of like shorthand for explaining a lot of things about us. Meaning I can say that I identify as a lesbian and that will basically tell you like who I will date, who I'm not willing to date, and probably a thing or two if you know a little bit about my history, you know, about like some of the struggles that I faced. Okay.
Right.
But it's shorthand. Like it doesn't really capture, I think, the lived experience of being somebody who, in my case, is like a cisgender woman who is attracted to other female-bodied people. And there's a lot of like gray, I guess, in life. And whenever you try to sort of like put it into one box, it's really difficult. And I think that what you're describing, it brought that to mind, this idea of like, on the one hand, embracing that label, like that term gay, gives you language for all of these things that you did not have a way of talking about or expressing or even understanding before. But at the same time, it comes along with all this other baggage of like, well, sports, like you're into sports, so therefore that makes you gay. But like, no, maybe that had nothing to do with it, or maybe it did, but what does that mean? And anyway, it's messy, and
it's very messy. And I think even while labeling myself lesbian, it brought up a whole other set of like gender issues, which I again like shoved in a corner. And I was sitting with the same friend on her couch, and she's like, dude, I don't think you're like a straight female. Like, I think you are on this non-binary scale. And I was like, again, what are you talking about? She's like, I really need to stop giving you like, wow, like bombs of who you are as a person. I'm like, maybe you should just be a psychologist, honestly.
Like, well, I mean, that's like a very ballsy thing to do, to like, I've never heard of somebody like reverse coming out.
she's like, I don't think you're like straight on the gender thing. I think you're like, you have a spectrum of it. And that was easier to handle and deal with. I honestly really never really liked the term lesbian, because I was just like, women, I wasn't really sure. Like, I was like, oh, non-binary, I love it. I'm not a man, I'm not a woman, and it works great for me. Mm-hmm. That was not that simple, though. It took me, again, like a very long time to really own it. I think a lot of it was just like, oh, if I internally think that, whatever. So yeah, so she like drops these bombs, and then she actually ended up like, that was the last Shabbat she was like in Israel, and then moved back to America. I was like, this is the bomb you're dropping and leaving? Really? But so I sat with that for a long time. I think there is a problem within the queer community. I like using the word queer because I don't feel like I fit. I mean, or I use the term non-binary lesbian, which again confuses a lot of people. It took me a long time to get to non-binary lesbian, but I think, yes, terms are helpful, but they also limit. I was speaking to someone, and they brought up like the fact that these terms limit you. And she's like, I just want to be part of the, like, I'm part of the queer community, but I really don't like all these terms. And I was like, I think honestly, the terms are so much more, I think, of for the rest of the world. The rest of the world needs me to fit into a box. So when I say that I'm a lesbian, they get it. Fine, you're going to marry women. We'll have all the issues with it. My parents can't handle it. But that is a very clear spectrum. I mean, my mother couldn't handle the fact when I came out as non-binary. Like, she couldn't even process it or deal with it. And she's like, she doesn't deal with the fact that I'm lesbian either. She's like, well, if we wait long enough, you won't do it because it's popular. But
okay, before we get there though, like, let's, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I am curious, like, no, how fine. You get from this moment of sitting on the couch and you have this friend who's telling you like, hey, I think that you're queer. I think that you're probably like non-binary. Like, how do you get from there to the point where you're coming out to your parents and where you're finding what labels fit for you? Like, what happens in between point A and point B?
So I think I came out to my parents, actually. I came out to my mother within, I think, almost like 6 weeks, because I was just reading, talking with her, blah, blah, blah. I actually wasn't planning on coming out. I specifically was sitting with her, and my mother was like, oh, let's go out for coffee. Fine. She came into Jerusalem, and I was speaking with my friend Dafka sitting in this classroom, and I'm like, I'm not telling her. There's no way I'm going to tell her. She's going to flip her crap. She's like, this is whole reaction. I know exactly what the reaction is going to be, and there's just no good reason to tell her. So, but I was like stuck in it, right? Because I'm processing and I'm dealing with it. But I also, once I had processed it and dealt with it, not even completely, but I was like, oh, this fits. I'm going to sit in it because it works for me. And when you're in that religious world, it's so identity based. Like, you need to have labels. Labels are all your society ever has given you. So when you find a label that like fits even slightly, you're like, I'm going to stick it across my chest because that gives me this box and almost like a safety place of like, I know what to do. I'm in a box. I know this system, even if I don't like the religious system of boxes, but that's what I've grown up in. And that's like verbiage. I know, okay, I'm gay. I'm in this box. So I came out to my mother opposite. I wasn't planning on it. And then we were sitting in the coffee shop and she's like, well, you know, anything you tell me would be fine as long as, you know, like the worst thing you would tell me would be like, if you're coming out as gay. So I was like, oh no, of course not. Absolutely not. But like, what if I was? So she goes down this whole thing about how she dicks at me because I'm her child and blah, 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 this whole thing. And then I was like, well, she opened the door. So at the end, like our tea and coffee was like almost finished. And I was like, by the way, about what you asked in the beginning of this conversation, I am. And she like flipped out as I expected. Nah, it's not a thing. Even if this thing, the one sentence that stood out the most of this whole conversation was she's like, even if women are beautiful, you have to marry a man. And I was like, oh, so A, you're not straight. B, that's not a good answer. So that was kind of the one conversation we had. So then I went back and I told my friend, she's like, I thought we talked about how you're not coming out to your mom. I was like, well, she brought it up. So I was just kind of running with it. Mm-hmm. It was still very fresh. I think the longer it's been, the less I feel like I need to sit in boxes. I think I also understand much more feeling like on all different parts of my identity that I don't need to necessarily fit in a box. Even religious wise, like people ask me, they're like, how religious are you? I'm like, I have a relationship with God. And that looks very different to people. And my parents are like, well, you have tattoos, so you can't possibly have a relationship with God. I'm like, oh, he called you and told you I can't talk to him because I have ink in my arm. Okay. But it took me a long time also because my relation, like the relationship with God is always defined as like your father, you're this, you're that. And it's very masculine. Like, well, you're defining him as like the only term you have to compare to God is a father and a like king and the wrong terms. So it took me so much longer to be like, but that's not the only version of a relationship you can have with God. And I'm very not into like formal religious communities. I think there are so many flaws and people refuse to see the flaws, but I like finding the authentic people within those communities. And the longer I've been able to be myself, I'm like, great, I'm going to show up 100% authentically me. If you can handle it and you can show up like that as well, then I don't really care what you believe in. And I think that's missing. I mean, it was just very much of like, I think also with my queer journey of like, I have to be authentically, like as soon as I could figure it out, it became a label because it was like, okay, that's authentically me. Like it gave me this stamp of like, I get myself, that gives me this internal box, but also I have to say something about it more so because A, I hate hiding things. Like that two-faced version of things really was something that bothered me in the religious community. So it was like, I know this about myself, so I have to tell my parents. Mm-hmm. Which in hindsight, I was in a very privileged place to be able to do that. I wasn't living at home. I was living in the dorms. I mean, my mother still at the end of the conversation when we left, she's like you could still come home if you wanted to. And we've had ups and downs with that. But I think my disability also played into that of like, well, they never really like, you know, like dropped me. I think there was a whole other... So I'm very privileged in that sense of like, my parents were never like, you can't come home. We're disowning you, that sort of thing. I mean, my dad's reaction, we ended up dealing with it in family therapy in a different situation. He's like, well, you're not with a woman right now, so you're not gay. And the therapist was like, that's not how this works. And he's like, well, I have a bigger issue with the fact that she doesn't keep Shabbos and the fact that she has a tattoo. So like, you know, she's not really queer. And I was just like, okay, we're never going to have this conversation again. Mm-hmm. So I think they accepted to a point. When I had my break, I had another breaking point in the beginning of September this past year, I guess.
Yeah.
And I had kind of changed my pronouns and been more involved in like, okay, I'm very much like not a cisgender person,
mm-hmm.
but society really struggles with the idea of it. It's really not something, especially here. I mean, especially with A, Hebrew is just a gendered language. So
right.
there isn't A to begin with, you're shoved into this. And then as much as like my brother was like, okay, you're gay, I get it. It was kind of expected.
Did you mentioned that you came out to your brother, but like, did you come out to other people besides your family at that point?
No, but I think I never really did this whole coming out thing. But I also was like the one late to the party. Like I was very late to my own party because when I would speak to people, they're like, oh, you finally realize you're gay? Great. So like family, friends, and people who were open with it are like, oh, like, duh. Again, like this, what it was so much less of a coming out and more of like, everyone else around me had figured it out and they were waiting for me to turn on the light to my own party.
Mm-hmm. Wow, how did that
feel? Which I think made it a lot easier. Well, so it made it easier and it made it a lot harder. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me forever ago then?
Yeah.
Like, if you figured this out when I was 13 and my best friend sitting in your floor on Shabbat, like, would you like to have let me know then? And she's like, but you obviously didn't have the words to deal with it because you only came to it in the right time. I think I did. I think I honestly... People are like, oh, would you have like not been suicidal in high school if you had figured out you were gay? I was like, I don't know. It was in a religious institution. Would it have made my life so much better to know I was an outcast and didn't fit in? Like, I'm not necessarily sure. I don't necessarily think it would have solved my problems. I think it would have given a different set of them. Maybe I wouldn't be struggling with my identity, but I would think I would be struggling so much more with even the idea of fitting in. So... I don't know if it would have really made things easier. I mean, I think it would have made things easier in seminary because I think I would have connected to a lot more girls. I think I was so stuck in not getting it. And like Dafka, half my flatmates who were in my dorm were like the queer girls. Like, seriously?
It's funny how that happens, right?
We're all, yeah, stick us all together. So I do think... had I figured it out in seminary. And I think also, again, like I had friends in seminary and I ended up speaking to them later and they're like, yeah, again, duh. Like, we didn't know that you didn't know.
Oh, wow.
So I think it was a lot. I was just like, what do you mean I didn't, like, what was so obvious? And I think to this day, I haven't completely figured out, like, why would internal attraction, like, what was so obvious? I wore button down shirt, like I did, yes, like I wore uniforms in high school. Like, what was obvious about me being queer in high school? Like, where were all these like external signs that I couldn't find that everyone else around me somehow had found? So to this day, it's still something that I'm just like, what the hell? Like, so yeah, so I didn't really come out to people because everyone was like, surprise, congratulations. I'm so happy to have you here. We all knew this.
So what about today? You talked a lot about sort of coming to terms with like the different pieces of the queer identity, right? And the people around you are already kind of aware of in one form or another. You know, where are you at with that today?
I feel like I'm not sure how to answer this.
It's okay. It's a tough question.
It's interesting. I feel like sometimes I don't know if everyone's figured it out around me, especially like in school. I mean, now it's different on Zoom. No one knows anybody. But back in the day of like real life, like I actually liked becoming friends with people on Facebook who were in my classes, because then they automatically got to see like this other part of my identity, and we didn't really have to have a whole huge discussion about it. But I think outwardly anyway, like I do very much, I worked on also more, I had like my own internal versus external crisis again of like, I'm not dressing how I want to dress. I want to dress super queer, but I also had like a very big struggle of like, when I dressed in a certain way that was super feminine, just easy because that's what was. And I think I didn't want, it was an interesting step that I struggled so much with, like, I'm going to empty out my entire closet of dry, like bun down shirts that you actually want to wear. But I mean, I think in university, I don't end up telling people per se. I think it's something more that I like almost leave to social media to discuss. But when we were in school, like me and this one other queer person, like bent the hallway, and then we had this huge conversation. We're like, okay, we're the two queer people here. So I think like the queer people find each other, I think, yeah, to a point. I still find it so much easier to have these conversations on social media than I think in person with people. I think I expect a certain level of tolerance from certain people, with people more who I interact with, but then I kind of just don't bring it up a lot. I think, which I think in a way also harms me, because I still have this part where I'm like, I'm not gonna rock the boat if we're just like gonna be classmates or whatever. If these are enough, if my hair and whatever else you deem to be a queer point works that out and you figure it out, great. If not, I don't know. Coming out, I think I haven't really figured out how to do, because I never really had to do it, mm-hmm, except my mother, and it was very so extreme. Even though I expected the extremeness of it, I think it did lead to, I'm not going to have these interactions with people. I don't need these levels of friction. If people get it, great. And I think I do mostly end up surrounding myself with people who get it, whether it's like verbally said or not. But I do think it's definitely part of also growing up in like whatever dysfunctional household situation of not wanting to say certain things that are going to rock the boat. And like, for what point, like just to come out to say I've come out. I think I've more gotten to that point of like, I'm going to own my identity, but I don't need to say it out loud, which I'm not sure if that's the end of the journey of owning your identity, but that's kind of where I'm at on the path. Like, I'll speak about it, I write about it, but for me, writing is much easier than verbally saying it, because I get to send it out into the world how I mean, and then you figure it out and you get it however you want, but I don't see your reaction.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of how I deal or don't deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't come out to a lot of people. I just got engaged.
And then what was your family, like, does your family know?
No.
Like, what's
the deal? No, sorry. Okay, well, I should rephrase that. I came back to the people who I felt should hear it from me. Meaning my family, my close friends, people in the community. But yeah, but outside of that, like, I also don't really love coming out. It's a really difficult space to be.
I think it also comes with so many questions. And I feel like some of those questions, like, I don't feel like I have to answer. I mean, like, I've had so many times, like, I've been in a taxi and like they've asked me if I'm queer because of like my hair, mm-hmm, and my tattoos. And I was like, okay, hair and tattoos, fine. I get it. It leads to a lot of questions of like, explain your whole story to me. I'm like, I don't feel like I owe you my whole story. Like, I think it, everyone wants an explanation of like what happened.
Interesting.
And I think coming out like creates that to a point sometimes. It's like, am I going to stand up in front of the room and say I'm queer? No. Why? Like,
yeah.
Having the identity and being able to be in like a queer space is amazing. But also when you're in the queer spaces, you're not coming out because everyone's queer. Right. I don't know. I think coming out consistently is something that I think a lot of people, I've read different things about it. And it's just, the people who get it. And you create that like wink, wink, nod, nod. And like you create your group of people. And then it also becomes less of like, I don't need you to get it. Like, if you're not going to discriminate against me and you just don't get it, then great. Like, I feel like the people almost coming out leads so much more option of also like dealing with so much more discrimination and issues. And I feel like,
right, it you opens just don't you up say to anything a lot of
either.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of hate for no reason. And I think in-person interactions, like in a community, like I'd never lie about it. If someone asked me, of course I'd say yes, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that's a good place to be in of just like, I'm just not going to say anything. I think sometimes it makes me feel uncomfortable. And in those places I do kind of want to be like, I'm queer, I'm gay, but I feel like there is still a little part of me of like, but what's going to be their reaction to that? Like, do you really want to mess with everything?
Do you think that that would be different if we lived in a world where it was not as threatening to one's own like safety and well-being to be outwardly queer?
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. I deal with a lot of discrimination as a disabled person, and I think, you know, one of my mother's things was like, you already have so many problems and like you're adding this one. I was like, don't you see how it was more problematic for me not to be out? But when like you check off of like the minority checklists, you know, and I'm like, I get it, I'm white, but also like I'm queer, I'm disabled, I'm Jewish, like any more X's we want to cross off on this list. And I think being disabled has been a whole interesting journey also with my body. And I wasn't just sure if I hated my body because I was disabled. And it took me a long time to get to a point with my body and disability that I was fine with. And then throwing in being gay and being attracted to women and then being non-binary, there was a whole process with that as well. And I think it became, I don't know, I think it was something so much more personal. And just like the way I share it with the world is by writing. And if you get it through that, great. And like my outward appearance, color my hair is super short. Like all the things that are more, and people are like, oh, you only do that to tell someone. I'm like, no, A, I love short hair. I'd never go back to long hair. You couldn't pay me to go back to long hair. But
it also has the benefit it of does. Being shorthand.
Exactly. It's like, exactly. It's straight shorthand. Like, it's very clearly shorthand in this, in that way.
Yeah, you were talking about like taxi drivers asking you if you were queer. And I realized that I had never had that experience. And I guess partially it's because I present in like a very traditional feminine way. Relatively short hair, but I've never had like a pixie cut or anything like that. And the way I dress is pretty conservative as well. And there was a moment where you were saying that and I was like, oh my God, someone would actually do that? And then I realized I've just never been in those shoes. If anything, I think I've gotten the opposite.
Yeah, I've gotten that a lot, but I...
Which is that when I come out, I had this experience when I was... Yael and I lived in New York for a few months right before COVID. I was interning at the UN. And I had this experience again and again where I would say that, you know, I was there with my partner. And suddenly everybody, I felt like I owed people my life story. Like they were also like, but how can that be? You're religious, but you look so religious and you're here. Like, and I was like, whoa, 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 I don't want to give you all of that. I just wanted to tell you that I can't come because it's my partner's birthday party tonight, you know, like.
Yeah, I think with being in this like minority situation, also like people, like all the taxi drivers would ask me like, oh, what's your problem? Like, what happened to you? Why can't you walk or whatever? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's like an Israel thing. Okay. Like I never got it in America.
Okay. That's fair.
I think it's very much this Israel thing of like, we will ask you about your smallest and largest problems and where you're going and whatever. But I think society struggles with someone like outwardly just doesn't fit exactly with cisgender, heterosexual, white, you know, girls supposed to look like, supposed to do, supposed to want. So I think they put that on us to like owe them to an explanation. And I'm like, there's a part of owning your journey of like, I don't owe you telling you what I am and why I am it. When I choose to write posts about it and discuss it and tell it on my terms or in a podcast like this, that's my choice. It's my voice. You're not twisting it. And you don't get to ask the questions that I won't feel comfortable answering.
Right.
And I think that's sometimes lost. And I think that's something lost in the community of like always feeling like we have to answer things.
Yeah.
And explain. Because how could it be? Because it's so different. And it's like, it's not that different. It's more of, you know, just not willing to, wanting to look at people who are different and accept them the way they are. So they need to fit into some kind of box.
Right. Do you have any words of advice that you would give to a 13, 14 year old in the same position that you were in?
I could say the classic cliche term that everyone says about queer people, right? It gets better.
Then some things are cliche because they're true.
I think it's true, but I think it's more true to say you will make it better for yourself, even if you don't have the tools to do so right now. I don't think it automatically will get better. Like, yes, you might not be in a super homophobic situation, but if you haven't figured out your identity, your internalized homophobia will eat you alive. So the situation, as external as the problems are, it's so much more of, yeah, understanding that it will get better with time, but it's going to get better because you're going to have the tools and verbiage in which to live your life. It's not going to get better just because time will pass. Time can pass, and if you stay in the same, you know, closeted thing with, but you also have to take a leap of faith, but you have to take the leap of faith in a safe space and in a safe time. And that is also incredibly important, of realizing like, I was incredibly privileged with how dysfunctional my family was and how my whole situation with my disability gave me a lot of freedom to come out and know that I wasn't going to be dropped on the street by my parents. I would say own it. I would say write a lot. That's because I'm a writer. I would say find a way to process. And even if you can't process it fully, like write down and like leave yourself those like crumbs to like make the map later, like focus in and like live with those dots, but also kind of, you don't have to figure out the dots completely. You don't have to figure out the whole map, right? Okay. But when you see and notice those small parts on the map, like let them be signs and work with that, regardless of how closed off you are from the world. If you figured out how to listen to this podcast, you're going to figure out how to find everything. And it's not going to be so fast. And it's a process. It's going to take a while. Like, I also don't think that it's like, oh, great, I came out as a lesbian and my whole life was figured out. No, it wasn't. It opened up a lot of more questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's also fine. Like, that's also super important to know, is like, that box in the queer community, and that's fine, but you can own it in a different way. And how you start is not necessarily how it will end, and own that process and live with that process. I think it's just important to not also get stuck. I was like, oh, I'm lesbian, so there's no way I'm non-binary. It's like, no, you can be a non-binary lesbian, but you have to be open to having that discussion and be in those uncomfortable thoughts and places with yourself, which I think is also it's a struggle, but I think at the end of the day, it's very worth the struggle with the end result of actually being your authentic self, regardless of how hard it is. I at least think and feel that living my life authentically, kind of the only way I know how to do it, regardless of how painful it is. And I think living that path and processing it and doing it will at some point yield results. And I don't think there are short results. I think it's a long-term process. And also that those results don't need to look like what society shows you. I think also sometimes in the queer community, there's very much like one version of queer sometimes. I think also, especially in the way the media has very been portrayed. And someone was like, oh, but like, you've never been to pride parades, you're not really out. I'm like, being out is not determined by me being comfortable to be in large spaces with a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I think owning your queer identity, regardless of how other parts of society will tell you that that doesn't exist, other parts of society will say you aren't queer enough, you aren't this box enough, and just really listening to your inner voice and the process that that will take you on is kind of what I would tell them.
Sound advice.
And reach out and find people, even if it's hard. Like, it's very hard to do, especially if you're in like much more of a religious community, but I don't know, search for a few people who get that you don't fit in with their system. Cause there are those people who get you, even if they're in the system. I found those few who got it, that I wasn't, didn't fit the system, and that didn't bother them. My best friend in high school, like, I didn't go to her for Shabbat. I studied for all my exams with her. And she understood that I didn't keep Shabbat, and like would wear, and like when I graduated high school, I kept going back to her house for Shabbat, and I would wear like a short skirt over pants. They didn't care. The rest of the community cared, but her parents and her family, and she didn't. And we'd have discussions about religion and like the issues with it and whatever. So there are those authentic people who can see other authentic people with them. I think they're easier to find the more authentic you are within yourself. But they exist. And I think sometimes they're seen as like the brash people or whatever, but they're the people that own their life. So yeah, own your life in like a safe way and process it and deal with it. And it gets a lot better when you do that.
Sounds good. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we log off for the night?
No, I think it's all been said. I mean, if they come join my journey on social media,
where can people find you?
I'm Disabled Dreamer on Instagram. I have also a Facebook page, but honestly, if you want content, Instagram's the place to be. And my website's coming soon also, so then all my content will also be, all my writing content will also be on my website. But
I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
And maybe your own podcast down the line.
down the line it will happen.
Well, thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes today's episode. We want to thank Sam again for being so generous with their time and sharing their story with us. You can find Sam's writing on Facebook, Instagram, and their soon-to-launch website, which will have been linked in the description. If you have a story that you'd like to share, or if there are topics that you would like covered, please reach out to us at queeryid.com. Until next time.